Now, let's see that you're recording.
Okay, am I recording?
Okay.
Spock is grateful for the brief respite that the Luverinian.
Okay, did I say that, or did I say Luverinen? Something like that.
I don't know. I don't know how we pronounce it before.
Well, you could always go with Spock, obviously, would have the pronunciation right, even if Jim
Okay,
didn't. So your version is the
Luverinian.
official
Okay,
one.
Luverinian.
Okay.
Spock is grateful for the brief respite that the Luverinian. Spock is grateful for the brief respite that the Luverinian ambassador's passage has given the crew. Engineering is taking advantage of the simplicity of the mission to repair damage from the Jafeni minefield. And Spock's time is sufficiently free that he has the luxury of requesting the captain's company. However, when he goes in search of the captain, Spock finds that he has retired early, which is unfortunate, but not unduly so. He takes advantage of the opportunity to embark upon a conversation with the ambassador herself, who is very interested in Spock's recounting of his father's diplomatic experiences, and pleasantly eager to share with Spock her own culture and her assessment of the mining conference to which they are en route. It is with true regret that Spock directs his path towards the transporter room to bid farewell to the ambassador and her staff with Captain Kirk. It is as Spock is walking through the corridors, not far from the transporter room, that he comes upon Captain Kirk and the Luverinian ambassador's secretary in an embrace against the wall of the corridor. Spock pauses, aware that his presence is an intrusion on something private, yet unable to look away as Kirk and the secretary share an extremely prolonged and thorough kiss. When the kiss breaks, Spock can hear Kirk laugh quietly and say,
Here, let me turn up the volume here just a bit. Okay. Well, I didn't see that coming.
"I'll be the secretary, I guess.
Okay.
After a night like last night, it would be rude of me not to express my appreciation when I saw you next," the secretary says with an unconvincing primness, and Kirk laughs again.
Oh, well then, I wouldn't want to be rude.
The captain reaches out a hand and draws the secretary into another, briefer kiss before extricating himself from the embrace and walking towards the transporter room with the other man. It is apparent to Spock that neither of the participants had noticed Spock's presence. Spock is not able to give his full attention to the ambassador's departure, preoccupied with the scene he had witnessed in the corridor. He should not be surprised. Kirk's propensity for frequent and meaningless sexual gratification is well known to him, but he is, and disturbed as well. But he is, and disturbed as well. That evening, after arranging for Ensign Chekov to supervise Storek, Spock requests and gains entrance to the captain's quarters. "May I speak with you, Captain?" Kirk gives him a look that indicates that he believes Spock is behaving strangely.
I thought we'd agreed you were going to call me Jim, unless this is official business. But in that case, shouldn't you be bugging me in my office? It's late, Spock, and I'm kind of tired.
"Of course," says Spock evenly, satisfied with his own objectivity. "It is only logical that you should experience weariness. I imagine last night's activities left little time for rest." The captain reacts to Spock's statement with displeasure. He leans forward quickly and narrows his eyes.
What is that supposed to mean?
Spock is pleased that their conversation has come so naturally to the point at hand. He desires to make plain the required changes in behavior and be finished with this unpleasantness as soon as possible. "It is, in fact, on this topic that I wish to speak with you, Captain.
On what topic?
On the topic of your sexual pursuits."
Excuse me?
Kirk appears agitated, but this is only to be expected. Humans are often irrational about sexual matters. Spock ignores it as irrelevant and continues. "I could not help but observe your behavior with the ambassador's secretary in the corridor this morning."
What do you mean you couldn't help it? You couldn't have just walked away?
as I was disappointed to realize that although your behavior is certainly much improved in some respects since taking command.
You don't get to talk about me like I'm a dog that's learned not to piss on the carpet anymore.
And the arena of your sexual relationships, if they can be described as such, you remain addicted to infantile pleasure-seeking behaviors. Kirk rises abruptly from his seat on the bed and intrudes on Spock's personal space.
Excuse me, but how is it any of your goddamn business?
Although I admit that this is a delicate issue, I believe I have no choice but to intervene, since no one else seems prepared to do so.
Damn it, Spock! I'm an adult!
And therefore must inform you that I cannot allow you to continue in this vein if you plan to remain a parental figure, and thus a moral role model to Storik. Jim reels, as if Spock has physically struck him, and sinks back to the bed. He leans forward, setting his elbows on his knees, and looks down at his clasped hands, then up at Spock. His voice, when he speaks, is sheathed in icy calm. The Vulcan in Spock cannot help but admire it.
Say it,
Kirk says, never looking away from Spock's face. Uncomprehending, Spock says wearily, please clarify. I do not know what you want me to say.
If you're going to say it, you should have to say the word. You should have to say the word, not just dance around it. I mean, that's what all this disapprove and role model bullshit works out to, right? Just say it, Spock. Just say it to my face. You won't be the first.
Spock is irritated and disconcerted to note that it is now Kirk who wears an expression of disappointment aimed at Spock. I do not know what word you are referring to, Spock says heatedly, and moreover,
slut,
Kirk says calmly, simply.
That's what you're thinking, right? You know, it's funny. I've gotten the you're a slut, stay away from my girlfriend speech, and even the you're a slut, stay away from my daughter speech, but you're a slut, stay away from my 10-year-old son is a new one, even for me.
Uncomfortable with this sudden swerve in conversation, Spock attempts a retreat. That's not what I...
Oh, I get it,
Kirk says, still projecting calm. But Spock has enough experience projecting false calm over actual anger and hurt to recognize his own techniques.
No, that's fine. You're taught linguistics. Precision with words is important to you. I got you. Maybe it's not slut you're going for. Maybe you were looking for whore. That one's popular. Or if it's the fact that I go with guys that bothers you, maybe you want cocksucker. That one's even true.
The word whore echoes in Spock's mind and his memory. Traitor was a word that Spock's control had survived. He remembers at the cruel hands of his Vulcan peers, but whore had broken it. It is a vicious word. He has always disapproved of others' use of it. Sometimes
vociferously.
Sometimes vociferously. That is not what I meant to say, Spock says quietly, regretting that he has apparently expressed himself so imperfectly. None of that is what I meant to say. I merely meant to remind you that Vulcans have different standards of sexual behavior, with more stringent sexual mores, and that you must now consider what sort of example you are setting for others, rather than only your own desires. To continue to entertain a frequent stream of lovers openly, when Storik will inevitably learn of it, is no longer... Spock stops. Jim is wearing an odd sort of smile, almost sweet, and Spock enjoys a moment of believing himself understood and forgiven, before Kirk shakes his head slowly and says,
"You can't even hear the words coming out of your mouth, can you? It's amazing."
Spock is taken aback. I do not understand, he begins, and Kirk laughs without humor.
You got that right,
he says in an undertone.
Listen, Spock, I'm damn tired. And not because I wore myself out last night with fucking, by the way. Raising a kid while captaining a starship, it turns out, is pretty damn exhausting. A lot more than late-night marathon kink fests, that's for damn sure. And I would know. I'm really fucking tired, so I'm going to say my piece, and then you're going to get the fuck out so I can get some damn sleep, and then you're not going to talk to me again in anything but an official capacity until you grow the fuck up and get over yourself.
Spock can see the exhaustion on Kirk's face, and knows that it should inspire him to more lenience. But the human seems to believe that he has somehow acquired the right to issue ultimatums to Spock on this matter, and it is impossible not to feel a growing irritation at his obstinacy. The captain, for his part, shows no sign of backing down.
I don't know where you get this idea of me as... No, you know what? I know exactly who to thank for this. Our favorite Lieutenant Uhura, telling you all the juicy stories about Captain Kirk, the campus... Telling you all the juicy stories about Cadet Kirk, the campus, insert transportation mode here. Everybody gets a ride. Look how the fuck up made good. It's a funny old world, isn't it? And the thing is, even if you were right, even if I was still, how did you put it, entertaining an endless stream of lovers or whatever? Even if I was, that would be none of your fucking business because I'm an adult and a human. And sex is natural and healthy and fun, and I have tried to make compromises. I have tried to make the compromises I can to your Vulcan morals, but I am not going to stop being human just because you think it's icky.
Kirk's peculiar smile returns, and his head tips to one side in a manner reminiscent of a very small child about to tell a joke.
But see, the funny thing is, you're full of shit. Do you know how often I've gotten laid in the past 8 months, Spock? 5 times. 5 fucking times. All of them goddamn diplomatic aides. And let me tell you a secret, Spock. Diplomatic aides, shitty in bed. Universally. Don't ask me why, but there it is. So there you have it. By James T. Kirk standards, I've been living like a monk. And all of this time, you've been thinking of me like...
As Kirk struggles for words, all traces of anger drain out of his face, leaving only a raw, wounded look and a disturbing apathy.
Fuck you, Spock.
He says finally, wearily.
I'm going to bed. Alone. I'll pick up Storik in the morning. I'll pick Storik up in the morning.
Spock leaves quietly in very great turmoil. He picks up a visibly drowsy Storik from Chekhov's quarters, and the two of them walk in silence to their shared quarters. When Storik is prepared for bed, Spock, somewhat against his better judgment, sits in the chair by the side of Storik's bed, where Jim often sits. Unsure how to begin this discussion, he decides it is only logical to start from first principles. Captain Kirk is human, Spock says, and waits. Storik only looks at him solemnly, apparently expecting him to continue. Humans are different from Vulcans, Spock tries next.
Yes,
Storik agrees. The captain, being human, behaves differently than Vulcans usually behave. Has this been the source of any confusion to you, Storik? Spock watches Storik's face carefully, but even weary, Storik gives nothing away. All that Spock can deduce from the child's expression is a slow consideration.
I recognize the captain's humanity.
Storik says finally, in a tone that implies that he suspects Spock to be testing him somehow.
It would be illogical to expect a human to behave as a Vulcan.
Spock is once again reminded of a human aphorism, out of the mouths of babes. This time, and struck with its aptness, it would be illogical to expect a human to behave as a Vulcan, indeed. Storik's small voice interrupts Spock's thoughts tentatively.
It...
Storik trails off, but continues at Spock's nod, looking both anxious and somewhat defensive.
It... Captain Kirk's humanity is pleasing to me.
The first time that Kirk had ever come to Spock's attention, biting down into an apple and thinking in a way no Vulcan would or could, presenting the thing that Spock could least resist, a challenge. The ease with which he had come to trust the human over the course of that one terrible, turbulent day, based largely on the utterly irrational, instinctual trust that James T. Kirk had inexplicably placed in Spock himself. The continual intrigue of their chess games, the unpredictability that makes Spock approach each match with anticipation, the easy and generous affection which Kirk demonstrates to his crew, to Spock and to Storick, without expectation of reciprocal gain, these are the outward signs, the products of Captain Kirk's humanity. To instill in the captain a facsimile of Vulcan control and impassivity would require the loss of those things, and the many others like them, which have led Spock to consider Jim Kirk his first, and perhaps only friend. It would be illogical to expect a human to behave as a Vulcan, Spock repeats to himself. And his humanity is pleasing to me. I will meditate on this. I fear I have done harm, and the way to repair it is unclear. A most trenchant analysis, Spock replies. It is an inefficient response, but Spock does not feel equal to the task of continuing their discussion at present. He hopes that another opportunity will arise, when his mind is no longer in such disarray. He retires to his own room to meditate. He wishes very much that his mother was still alive to advise him. She would have known what to do, Spock is certain. Instead, Spock must forge ahead equipped only with his own limited expertise with human emotion, which is largely limited to rage, which he still struggles to extinguish, and love, which has receded to the back of his mind since Mother died and Nyota ended their relationship, unneeded and therefore largely quiet. What Storick says is incontrovertibly true. What, then, had blinded Spock to those facts, leading him to behave in such an irrational way? If Spock had observed the human behaving the way Spock had, he would be tempted to attribute their actions to jealousy. Obviously, that is not a valid diagnosis in Spock's case. In the end, even after extended meditation, Spock cannot definitively answer the question of his own motivations, only of their negative consequences. Spock concludes that he has no choice but to add this occurrence to the long list of unexplained events somehow indirectly caused by the sheer chaotic influence of Captain James D. Kirk.
Okay, cool. Let me pause and... Go!
Doctor, may I ask your advice on a personal matter? Dr. McCoy looks suspiciously at Spock. You know, most people who come here and ask me that are either looking for sex advice, or they've got some kind of embarrassing STD. I'm gonna guess that's not what you're here for, though. Indeed not, Doctor, Spock says patiently. So, out with it, McCoy says, falling into his office chair with what seems to be an undue amount of force. I have come to ask your advice, not as a doctor, but as a human who has been in a long-term relationship with another human. You want to ask me advice because I was married? Yes. I would like to know, when your wife was justly angry with you, what was the approved method of making amends so as to return your relationship to its normal resting state? You're having a fight with Jim, McCoy says flatly. The captain is not my wife, says Spock, who has been required to utter that phrase several times in the past 2 months. He finds the repetition very tiresome. McCoy snorts and leans back in his chair. I mean, he is, says the doctor. But we can pretend he's not for now. How did I make up with Jocelyn? Spock nods. Well, it generally involves some chocolates and flowers, which is pretty standard. But I don't think that's what you're looking for. I wouldn't recommend it anyway. I see, Spock says, discouraged. Perhaps Mr. Sulu will have some more applicable advice, or Nurse Chappelle. But, McCoy continues, holding up a finger, after a while, I figured out that it's generally best to start with, I was wrong, And I'll bet that's true for idiot male starship captains, too. Better than flowers, anyway.
I'm so sorry. I hope my little muffled snickering noises don't make it into this final recording. But the captain is not my wife. Poor Spock. Just live in denial, baby. Just live in denial. Okay, so it's... I'm Uhura, right? So do I have the hold of the next scene?
Yes. I think so.
Okay. Well, here I go then. When Jim sees Uhura heading for the turbo lift, he jumps up from his chair and walks nonchalantly to join her. Once the turbo lift doors have closed in front of them, he says, "Nice job, by the way, on telling Spock I'm some kind of galactic slutbag. Very classy." "Nice job, by the way," Uhura replies, rolling her eyes, "on hitting on me in an unbelievably tacky way the first time we met, hitting on me pretty much every day of my life since, and sleeping with my roommate at least 5 times that I know of, at least one of which was in my bed. Very classy, Captain." They've reached the recreation decks, and the door is starting to slide open, but Jim pushes the button, and it locks closed again. He leans up against the wall of the lift, giving Uhura a long-suffering look. "It's possible I may have deserved that, yes," Jim admits, and Uhura mouths the word, "possible," at him silently. Jim scowls. She's looking at him impatiently, and he tries to put into words the way that this whole debacle has made him feel. Just because he's pretty... Oh, well, he is pretty, but... Just because he's pretty sure Uhura can count on one hand the number of times that she's respected him in her whole life, that doesn't change the fact that he's respected her almost from minute one. "I wanted to blame you," Jim confesses, and Uhura looks confused and starts to say something, but he holds up his hand. He wants to try to get through this. "I wanted to blame you," Jim repeats, "but the thing is, it's not you. Because when you call me a slut, it's kind of in an affectionate way, you know? Or at least, that's how it sounds to me. If I'm wrong, don't tell me. But when Spock said it..." Jim looks away, can't meet her eyes, even though he knows that's a giveaway as good as shouting to a trained communication specialist. "That was different," he settles on, although other words, like "hugely fucked up," also occur to him. "I'm sorry," Uhura says, gently, more gently than he would have expected. It's not the kind of "I'm sorry" that involves accepting blame, just an expression of sympathy. But since it's not her fault anyway, Jim's okay with that. "Me too," Jim replies. "I mean, I'm sorry that things didn't work out for you two. Anyway," he says, cracking a smile, "you can put a lid on it now, because my galactic slut days are over." "I had noticed," Uhura tells him, giving him a smile of her own. "Does that mean the great James T. Kirk is finally..." "Does that mean the great James T. Kirk is finally growing up?" she asks, teasing. "Yeah," Jim thinks ruefully. "I'm getting the awful feeling that's exactly what it means." He holds up a finger to his lips as he hits the turbolift button to open the door, and as it hisses open, he says, "Shh! It's a secret! No one can ever know." Uhura raises an eyebrow at him, just as beautifully as Spock ever does, and tells him, "I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Captain, but I think your secret's already out." "Damn it!" Jim curses, laughing, and Uhura laughs with him as she leaves the turbolift and him behind. Okay, I'm recording whenever.
"I was wrong,"
Spock says when Jim opens the door to his quarters. "Wow, that took a lot less time than I thought it would," Jim says. Come in. Jim had meant, come in, take a seat, get comfortable. I have the feeling this might take a while. But of course, Spock misses out on that cue. As soon as the door hisses shut, he stands ramrod straight, with his hands behind his back and his eyes looking straight ahead at nothing, and announces to the room at large.
I was wrong to criticize your sexual behavior. I have no right to judge your actions in that arena, publicly or privately. My reaction was offensive, ill-informed, culturally insensitive, and deleterious to the continuation of our friendship, which is of value to me. I apologize.
Jim pauses, still standing in front of Spock, and looks his first officer in the eye. You're right, he says, not giving an inch. You were wrong. And also, damn straight, you have no right to judge me.
It is my wish that our friendship may return to its previous state as soon as possible,
Spock says, but Jim shakes his head. I don't think I want that. I don't think I want that. Our previous state wasn't so hot. I thought we were friends, but you were secretly thinking some pretty nasty things about me. Spock says nothing. Jim taps his foot. Why should I accept your apology without knowing for sure that you won't just do the same thing again in a week? Spock visibly hesitates on the cusp of doing or saying something. His eyebrows are leaning in toward each other, and the curve of his neck is flooded with tension, and Jim feels bad about pushing him. They had a cultural misunderstanding. Spock's a good guy. Jim actually did used to be kind of a man whore. Not that there was anything wrong with that.
Please excuse me,
Spock says suddenly.
I must return to my quarters briefly to retrieve two items. I was assured that they would be unnecessary, but as my present approach is clearly unsatisfactory, it is apparent that I have been poorly advised. I would request that you withhold judgment until I return with the necessary supplies.
Spock? Jim starts, giving Spock a look. Giving Spock a look that he hopes fully conveys the weird and ominous feeling that descended on him when he heard the word supplies. Spock, what are these supplies? Spock looks nervous but defiant.
I was informed that, for full effect, my presentation of these objects must be a surprise.
Jim doesn't know whether to run away or... He's thinking probably run away. Spock, trust me when I say, I'd really like some warning. What are these objects, Spock? You're freaking me out. Spock looks, if possible, even more nervous.
A night-blooming plant which I purchased from Lieutenant Sulu's private collection, which he assured me would be most efficacious, and which is currently in quite colorful blossom, and a box containing a selection of small earth comestibles? And a box containing a selection of small earth comestibles devoid of all nutritional value, composed largely of products derived from the cocoa tree.
Jim stares at Spock. Spock stares straight ahead. Jim's eyes get bigger. Spock gets more nervous. Carefully controlling his voice, Jim says, "You were going to bring me flowers and chocolates."
Yes,
Spock says, sounding uncertain.
If you desire, I can retrieve them immediately. The blossoms are quite spectacular,
he adds with special emphasis, as if that's the key that'll make Jim forgive him. There are only two reasons that Jim doesn't burst out laughing loud enough to wake the dead, even though he really, really wants to, and feels a little like he'll die if he doesn't. First, that as soon as this discussion is over, he's going to tell Bones about it, and then laugh and laugh and laugh until his stomach hurts. And second, that poor Spock looks like he's about to shake apart, and he has apparently made a serious good-faith effort to understand and participate in human custom and social ritual, even though he's way, way off base on this one. Thank you, Spock, he says, even though he knows his voice sounds weird, because he's clenching his jaw to keep from cracking up. I'm very impressed that you went to the trouble of researching human social expectations. But whoever gave you your first advice was right. Those aren't really necessary. About 5 metric tons of pressure bleed out of Spock's posture.
Then we may return to our previous mode of interaction?
He asks, and Jim says yes, slightly against his better judgment. But let's be honest, Jim thinks. He doesn't want to have the big feelings discussion any more than Spock does. Chess?
That's you.
Sorry, yeah. Chess? He asks Spock. Or do you need to go back and keep an eye on Storik?
Mr. Sulu was kind enough to take on the necessary supervisory duties,
Spock says.
I would indeed find a game of chess pleasant.
Of course, over the chessboard, they wind up talking anyway. Jim should have known. I mean it, Spock says. I meant it, Jim says, fiddling with the only piece he's succeeded in capturing so far, a lowly pawn. I know a lot of captains don't care about fraternization regs and do whatever they want anyway, but I don't. I know those rules are there for a reason. I absolutely wouldn't ever sleep with somebody who might think that they had to or lose their job. I wouldn't do that.
I am aware of that,
Spock says firmly, and a little knot in Jim's chest eases when he can see that Spock really means it.
I am aware of that, and I believe... I am aware of that, and I believe that your vigilance does you credit, Jim. But you do not have to explain yourself to me,
Spock adds, making off with one of Jim's knights. I know, Jim says, shrugging. But we're friends. So... Spock moves his rook carefully. He's playing an unusually conservative game tonight, even by his usual standards. Jim's guess is that it's another kind of weird Spockian apology, like it'll make Jim feel better if Spock goes easy on him. It totally won't, and Jim's a little irritated about it, actually. Of course, Jim's a big believer in the idea that irritation is meant to be shared. I can't even sleep with Gayla anymore, he comments tragically, looking at Spock for his reaction. And let me tell you, that was a wrench. Spock's eyes flick to Jim just long enough for Spock to revel in the annoyance he sees in... Spock's eyes flick to Jim just long enough for Jim to revel in the annoyance he sees in them.
I assure you, Captain, that I could not possibly have less interest in hearing about your past sexual expectations with Lieutenant Bro.
Exploits.
I assure you, Captain, that I could not possibly have less interest in hearing about your past sexual exploits with Lieutenant Bro, or any other member of this crew, or indeed, any member of the Federation.
Jim can't resist. I met this Klingon woman on my summer internship after sophomore year.
Or any sentient being of any race.
Spock amends swiftly. Giving Jim an exasperated look, he says,
or perhaps it is necessary for me to expand my parameters to include non-sentient life forms?
Jim throws his head back and laughs. You know, Uhura did that too. The first time we met, actually, she called me a dumb hick who only has sex with farm animals. That's a fond memory.
Did you deny it?
Spock asks, and Jim laughs again. Just the word only.
I see.
Spock stops going easy on him after that, which Jim's glad to see, but that also means that the game only lasts about another half an hour. When it's over, Spock rises from his chair and visibly steels himself.
Before I take my leave, I wish to inform you that, in accordance with principles of cultural respect and accommodation, should you wish at any point in the future to entertain sexual partners, you need only to inform me of your plans, and I will consider it my duty to take upon myself Storik's care and supervision for the duration of your activities. It is my hope that I may, in this way, demonstrate my support for your human needs and desires, and make amends for my past conduct, which I recognize was intolerant.
Jim takes a deep breath. He can tell that Spock is trying to be nice, and that's great, But, Spock, look, I get that you're trying to be supportive here, but implying that I'd let some random hookup get in the way of my responsibilities to Storik is really not the way to do that. Spock's face tightens, and he looks distressed.
I never meant to imply.
Last time, you called me a slut, and I guess that's fair.
No,
Spock says intensely.
It was not.
But you said I wasn't... You said that Storik... Jim doesn't want to say any of this, but he can't seem to stop it from spilling out of him anyway. You said I wasn't good enough for Storik, that you were going to take him away from me if I didn't clean up my act, and that's... You can't do that. Jim shakes his head. I mean, you can. That's what scares me, is you could have another hissy fit just like that one, and I've got nothing. Nothing to fight you with. You could fuck off to New Vulcan tomorrow with Storik, and I couldn't stop you. And I didn't even think... That didn't even cross my mind until you told me that I'd have to shape up, or I wouldn't be able to be a role model for Storik, and you'd take him away. Spock looks genuinely shocked. Even on a human, his expression would count as stunned. He takes a step toward Jem, still seated at the table, and speaks quickly and surely.
Jim, I would never undertake such an action. It would be the height of illogic. You and Storik have built an extremely beneficial rapport, one that does not exist between Storik and myself. Indeed, logically, if one of us were to be removed from his parental responsibilities in regard to Storik, it would surely be me.
Spock admits, and Jim can tell it cost him something to say it. Jim doesn't know what to say to that, so he waits. So he just waits while Spock breathes deeply, steps even closer, and says,
I was aware that my statements had offended you, but not that they had frightened you. I apologize for both.
Jim wants to protest that he wasn't scared. What the fuck is Spock talking about? But instead he just says, apology accepted. Because one thing he's never doubted about Spock is his first officer's ability to call Jim on his bullshit. Spock meets his gaze, and Jim is suddenly very aware that Spock's practically standing beneath his legs. That Spock's practically standing between his legs, and Jim can feel the heat rolling off of him, inhuman, both comforting and provoking. When Jim looks up to meet his dark eyes, he's reminded of what started this whole ugly, stupid mess in the first place. He looks away and says lightly, Anyway, Spock, it turns out you don't need to worry. It looks like I'm probably not going to be entertaining any more sexual partners for a while.
If this is in reaction to my... You should not...
Spock stammers, and Jim waves his hand dismissively. Don't worry about it, Spock. It's not you, it's me. The cultural reference flies right over Spock's head, like Jim knew it would, but it does seem to reassure Spock, so Jim's calling it a win. I'll see you tomorrow, Spock, Jim says. And, don't eat those chocolates yourself, okay? I've heard things about Vulcans and chocolate.
I am aware of the effects,
Spock informs Jim primly, basically confirming that all the stuff Jim's heard about Vulcans and chocolate is true. Jim resolves to get Spock sugar high at the next available, responsible opportunity. Spock gives Jim a look that says he knows exactly what's going through Jim's head.
I believe the human expression is, although I am certain that it is too late, don't even think about it.
Jim wishes Spock a good night, closes the door behind him, then lets his head fall back against the door with a loud thunk. Flowers and chocolates. Christ! Repeat after me, Jim. Stupid crush. Just a stupid little crush. It's a stupid fucking crush.